This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. There's no ease in podcast and no ease in blueberry.com.
Judy's got a stick shift. Judy's got a stick shift. Judy's got a stick shift. Judy's got a stick shift.
G'day, I'm Eric.
Hi, I'm Judy.
And welcome to episode 3 of Eric's Blast from the Past. And you can find us at blastfromthepastpodcast.com, and you can email us irkpod@gmail.com. And guess what?
What?
We're now on iTunes.
Really?
So people can find us on iTunes. So if you go to the website and then click on the little iTunes logo,
right,
you can subscribe to us.
Right. So make sure you do it.
Or if you go to channelirk.com, you can go and get the combined feed for all of my shows and listen to them all.
Oh, that's good.
So that's cool. So I worked on that during the week.
Is that made easier for me, is it?
That's made easier for everybody.
Oh, I thought you were doing it special for me. I'm one of the dummies.
No, it's all good.
I still got my old plates.
You have.
And yeah, I'm a trainer.
And that's why I'm here.
Trainee.
So, in case people are listening to us for the first time, why don't you tell us why we're doing this podcast and what it's about?
Right. Well, what it is, Irk talked me into having a go, and I turned around and I kept saying no, 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 because I thought it was just for all you youngins out there.
Get the hell off of my lawn.
What lawn?
That's right, we haven't got any lawn at the moment.
No, it's not lawn, it's brown dirt. So I turned around and I decided, I went round to the studio and I watched Irk and Drew record. And I turned around and I decided, after talking with Drew and Eric, to give it a go. So Drew suggested that we call it Back in Time, but we tried to get registered, but it was taken. So then we turned around and I had an old mate that I hadn't seen for a long time, and when we went to meet up again, I told him so he'd remember me in case he forgot what I looked like. I'd walk up to him and say, "Hi, it's a blast from the past." And that's how we decided. But it was also taken. So then Eric suggested that we call it Blast from the Past Podcast, which rhymes really good, and I like it. So what my goals on this show are, that what we want to do is compare from the past, that's why we say past, to the present. Life experiences, changes, and compare them between the 60s and up to now in the 2000s. Want to talk about people in the local area. Later on, when I get a bit more confident, I've teed up to interview people from my past to the current. Also, we want to talk about music, entertainment, food, and sort of things that we used to do for entertainment as kids. It's something different in life. And I wanted to sort of say, well, you're never too old to learn how to podcast. So, and with a big help from Eric, this is what I'm trying to do. So I want to thank you, Eric.
That's all right.
And that's what it's virtually what it's all about. And so what we're going to do each time we record, we're going to have a subject to talk about. And I'd like to, every couple of episodes, I'd like to read. My younger brother was in a poet society in the 80s. And he wrote all these poems. And so each time I'm going to read a poem, it's only a short poem, but I'd like to read a poem that he wrote to do related to that episode. And also we're picking out a song to also to go inside, or not go inside, but to...
To play at the end.
To play at the end. That relates to the subject that we talk about as well. So it's a little bit of a variety, you could say, to entertain you.
So in episode 1 was basically an introduction to both of us.
That's right, yes.
And in the second episode, we talked about telephones. So that was episode 2.
Yeah.
And on this episode, we'll be talking a little bit about trains, as we will in episode number 4.
That's right.
Because it's a very important time of the year for me, because it's coming up to my anniversary of
15 years on the railway.
I'm halfway to a gold watch.
Yeah.
If they still have gold watches by the time I get there.
Oh, well, the water board's still give them out.
Well, you never know. So this week, you've been listening to another mother-son podcast.
Yep, Sherry.
The Sherry Cast.
That's right. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's really, I've been listening to about 3 a day so that I can catch up because I'm a bit behind. But I'm really enjoying their podcast, and it sort of makes me feel good, mother and son as well. And her son, he's pretty well, what he does, podcasting full time, doesn't he?
Yeah.
What's his name? Todd.
Todd.
Todd. And I love his laugh. He's got this really fantastic laugh. So, and for a lady surviving after a great tragedy, she's doing really well. My hat goes off to her.
She is. All right, so we're on iTunes, and we've introduced ourselves and what we're doing. So let's get onto the train.
Right.
And
toot, toot. All aboard.
and of course, when you were younger, when would the first time that you would have been on a go on a train regularly? Did you do train trips with your parents as a child, or?
When I was about, my first big train trip, I was 14. My father died, and so Mum put my sister and I was 14, she was 16, and we got the old steam train then to Muswellbrook, because that's where my dad come from.
For those of you who aren't in Australia, that's heading north, about, 3 hours?
In a steam train, it was longer than 3 hours. I mean, in the electric train that I went on a few years ago in 97, it was 4 hours. But on the Puff and Billy, I left Muswellbrook to come home at midnight, and we came home on the, you know, they called it the mail train back to the city, and all the guys that had been up that way shearing all went back to the city for Christmas. And I got back to Penrith by the time I got to Sydney, and then you had to change trains, get an electric train to Penrith. I got here at 9 o'clock in the morning, so I was all night on the train.
So that's a long trip for a 14-year-old.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it. I had a ball.
So what did you do to entertain yourself while you were on the train?
Well, I turned around and my auntie and uncle, that was my dad's brother, he was a coal miner up there, and I turned around and my sister came home early because she didn't like it. It's too country for her. But I had a ball because across the road from my uncle's place was where they used to shunt all the trains, or as you used to say when you were little, put them to bed.
Yep.
So I used to take my little cousin and we'd go up the hill and look down, and we used to watch them put the Puff and Billies into the thing and on the big turntable, and put them to bed. So that was a real good thing that we enjoyed. And my uncle's house was right opposite the main rail line, so that was another thing. But when I had to come home, because Mum sent a letter to my auntie to say, I want a home for Christmas.
Because this was before telephones was...
Oh, there was telephones, duh. But we turned around
and... Listen to episode 2 for more about telephones.
But they didn't have a phone on because they were too poor. He was a coal miner. He couldn't afford a phone.
So you got told to.
So she sent a letter to my auntie and saying that she wanted me home for Christmas. So my auntie had to force me on the train. So I booked the last ticket that I could to get home before Christmas. So I actually came home Christmas Eve. So they took me up to the station and I got the train at midnight, just on midnight. And we turned round, and as I said, the train was packed because it was all the shearers coming back to Sydney. And I was lucky, I got in, they had like shared, each one had 2 big long bench seats. And I was lucky, my uncle found me one to go into with a family. So I went in and sat in there. So it was virtually someone to keep an eye on me, you know. Because in them days, girls weren't allowed to travel and stuff, you know. So I got in with this family to travel back to Sydney. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. But what happened was we just got out of Muswellbrook, and along the railway line up there was a lot of big properties. And someone had left a gate open, and they had all these beautiful horses that we use for breeding. And this mare and foal were out on the railway line, and being dark, anyway, the train ran over the horse. Anyway, we had to turn around, and we were held there for a couple of hours. And they were trying to, with the blokes running up and down the train, all making a racket, so you know, everyone was hanging out the doors to see what was going on. And we found out it was a horse had been run over. So, and me being a horse person, was really upset.
That's a future episode.
Yeah. Anyway, so we turned around, and they finally got the horse out from under the train. They had to back it up and everything, you know. So that was one of the disasters of the travel home. And I found out later, a couple of weeks later in the Woman's Weekly, they had a story about it, you know. So you had it cut out and everything, you know.
Was that when the Woman's Weekly was actually weekly instead of monthly like
yeah,
it is now?
Yeah, it used to come out every week. Anyway, so coming home in the train, you could actually go down to the dining thing and you could buy something to eat and whatever. Well, I had hardly any money, but I had enough money to get a cup of tea. And so I bought a cup of tea, but not knowing or realising, coming on the train, I had a beige dress on. It was like a nylon dress. And then at the waist part, I had all little pinch pleats on the skirt. And I turned around. Well, when I got home, my mother was so cranky because I was putrid. Because one, putting your head out the window, you get covered in soot. And the other thing was I turned round and the train, you know, hit a bump or something, and I end up with my cup of tea all down the front of me.
Oh, no.
So you could virtually say the soot stuck to the tea stain. So I looked really lady, you know, really nice, you know, when I got home. And my legs, you know, and that. My mother was so angry because I sort of humiliated the family walking up the main street of town with a dirty, sooty dress on, you know. And I had long hair in them days, so I had all the soot all through my hair and, you know, so I was a ripe old mess when I got home. But I didn't care because I thoroughly enjoyed the train trip. It was an experience, you know.
Do you know how much that trip cost?
I can't remember. I mean, give me a break, Eric. I was 14. Yeah, I'm nearly 60. So I can't remember how much it was, you know. So not expensive to what it is now, but I can't remember. I really can't remember. So
that was your first big train trip. And
yep.
Then I remember you telling me stories about travelling to work in a factory in Marrickville.
Yeah. But before that, Penrith was only a little hick town. And my mother had a garage built for my dad's car. And we had a loan. And we used to, mum used to send them days you never had checks. She used to put money in an envelope. And someone knocked off the payment, one of the payments for the loan. So after that, my mother and my sister and I, we used to, once a month on a Friday, we'd have the day off school, and we'd go with mum to Parramatta to pay the loan. So mum would wait downstairs and I'd duck up and pay the loan. And we used to go to the shop, and mum used to make our clothes, and we used to go to Coles, have lunch, pie and peas, and mashed potato. That was the big, you know, trip. Parramatta was like a big trip to the city, you know. And then we used to go into the material part, and mum used to make my sister and I the same dress, same material. So one time she'd pick out one dress, I'd pick out the next material. So we, you know, mum would, because it was cheaper down there, she'd get so many metres. Well, in them days it was yards. And she'd buy a big thing of material enough to make my sister and I a dress each. So she'd save the money up and buy us a cup, you know, we'd have a dress each to pick. So she'd buy the material. So that was our big journey once a month to Parramatta. And then the next trip after that, you were saying about me working. Well, I started work when I was 15, and I turned around and my first job I got was at Marrickville. And for those that don't know Marrickville, well, you go into the city and then you head out to, where is it? Which way do you?
On the Bankstown line.
On the Bankstown? No, it was Bankstown?
I drive it every day. Trust me, it's a bank sound on.
I used to get the train, the mountains train, and they used to call it the fish and chips. Because a train, different trains had names.
One was the fish and the train behind it was the chips.
And then they had the heron. That was an old red rattler. We used to get, of a morning, we called it the heron.
Now, I think the fish was actually called the fish because that was the name of, like, the original driver or something like that. And so his name was Fish, and so they called it after him. And then they thought, well, we've called the train the fish, well, we'll call the train behind it the chips. I think that's the way it goes. But
yeah, but it used to leave Penrith at 9 minutes past six in the morning. And I used to start work at 8:30. But I got the job through a girlfriend of mine. She said to me, come with me for company to go get this job. And I went with her and she said, oh, while you're here, they were asking for workers. And she said, while you're here, you might as well have a go too. So I just thought, oh, yeah, righto. But I had to put my age up because I was only 15 and you had to be 16. So I, you know, changed. I used my sister's date of birth. So that way then I got, you know, got the right, I was the right age. So I turned round and I just said, oh, yeah, you know, first time I haven't worked before. I used to work in a milk bar selling, you know, milkshakes and things. But I turned around and I didn't think I'd think any more of it. But I got the job and she didn't. And I thought it was so funny because I didn't want the job.
And you got it.
And she did. And I got it. So I had to take the job, you know, and so I had no say in it. So I turned around and I used to get the chips every morning. So, you know, I'd have to get up 5 o'clock in the morning to rush down to the station and get the train to work. And it was always, being a mountain train going to the city, it was full. By the time I got to Penrith, there was no seats. You're yep. very lucky to get a seat. So you had to stand up. So I used to stand, you stand like they had the toilets in the corridor part of the train. They had the men on one side, ladies on the other side. Then there was a passage thing to go to either side door. And then you open another door to go into the big long train.
Was this still a steam train?
No, it was an electric train. We had electric then. So I turned around and I used to stand up until I sometimes be lucky because it didn't pick up. It stopped at Blacktown, it stopped at Parramatta, and then it was Stratfield and then Redfern. But you couldn't get on the train, you could only get off.
Yep.
So it was lucky. You know, you maybe sometimes at Blacktown or Parramatta, you got to know who sat where in the end because you got the same carriage every day. And I was lucky, I'd stand next to the person when I knew they were going to get off and you'd grab their seat. So you'd be lucky to get a seat. And that's when over night time, I used to go to the Central and I used to get the old Red Rattler home. And it was called the, what did I say before?
The Mudgy Mail.
No, that wasn't the Mudgy. That was when I was working at the telephone exchange. And I used to get the 11 o'clock train at night home. And they called it the Mudgy Mail because it was a milk train to Mudgy.
Oh, the heron.
The heron. We used to get the heron. So, and all my girlfriends then, they used to work in Sydney in, you know, different places. And we all used to get the fourth last carriage. And we'd sit in the double seats together and we used to play cards. So coming home, you know, we used to play poker to pass the time because it'd take you an hour and a half to get home because it was nearly virtually all stations home. So it'd take you a good hour, hour and a half. So I did that for a year and that's when I went onto the telephones because all the women I worked with, where I was working at was in a factory where they made nuts and bolts and all stuff to do with doors and hinges and things like that. And most of the women that worked there, they had a big area there where all the Navy wives were living in flats and things and while husbands away and whatever. So they all were working in the factories there. So I turned round and I was young, I'm only 15, 16, and all these other women are married and got kids and everything. So they all said to me, I work in a dead-end job. You know, nagging me all the time, you need to get a better job than this. And I said, well, it's a job. So they turned around and they said, well, what do you really want to do? And I said, oh. And then in the paper, they're always looking up the paper at lunchtime. So they sent a job there where Telstra was asking for people to join. And they said, what about that? And I said, oh, I love the telephones because of doing the phones for my dad. And that's when I applied, and that's how I got my first job, at, as I said in the last podcast, with the telephones. So, you know, I used to have to get the stand up, get the fish to work, get the heron home. Mm-hmm. So it was a real fishy job, wasn't it, eh?
Yeah.
So, and then I used to, when I used to get to Redfern, I'd have to run up the stairs, across the station to get the train to Marrickville. And I'll tell you what, a few times I've either slipped going up the stairs and end up going to work with skinned knees, where I'd slipped and scraped my knees or hurt my hands on the steps. So I was always slipping over because of trying to do two steps at a time to catch the opposite train to get me to work.
So when you're working in the telephone exchange and working nights,
okay,
what would have happened if you missed the if you missed the mail?
Well, if I missed the Mudgee Mail, I'd be up the creek without a paddle because that was the last train to come to Penrith. But I was lucky because I worked in the interstate and the monitors there turned around and they knew I lived out, and we called it the sticks then. So they'd used to, we used to swap the thing over to the night thing at 10 o'clock and they'd give you an hour to clear up all the calls that were still going and you know, fix the dockets and everything else. So once that was all done, because there was only four of us working, they turned around and they'd say, go on, take off. So you occasionally, if you got the one that was a bit of a bitch, you'd have to turn around and she wouldn't let you off until, you know, a little bit earlier or later. So you'd have to turn around and you'd have to run down the stairs and put your headphones and pens and things in your locker and grab your bag and you'd have to, I used to have to go, because I was at Wynyard, and you'd have to run up to Wynyard Station, jump a train and get it to Central, and then you get up the top area of Central, and then you'd have to run around and go down the stairs and that to get to the Country Link to get the Mudgee Mail home, because it was number 2 or 3 right round the other side, whereas the other train would drop you off at number 18 or something. So it was, oh, I was pretty fit in them days. I wouldn't be able to do it now. I'd just stand there and cry. So I turned round, and so they were really good to let you get the Mudgee Mail because I knew I had to get the country train home. But one time when I was working at Marrickville, they had a train strike. The trains them days are always going out on strike over something because that's when that was really unionised. Anyway, the bosses said, right, you live out in the sticks. They let me go at lunchtime because they knew all the trains were going to cut off at 4 o'clock or something. So I turned round and I went up and I got the train to the city and I got to get the train home. I end up coming home on a bloody steam train. And I ended up at Blacktown, which is halfway to Penrith. And I turned round and they terminated there. They said they weren't. They were all going out on strike. That was it.
And
they all stopped.
It.
And I got, and there was people everywhere. And I turned around and here's me, I'm only 15, stuck in Blacktown. And I turned around and I thought, oh, what am I going to do? I got off the train, got off the station, went outside. And people, you know, they had buses going local and things. But I couldn't afford a cab fare to Penrith, you know. So I sat there and I cried. And I thought, what am I going to do? So then I thought, I went and found a phone box. And I rung up a girlfriend of mine and I'm crying and going, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I can't get home. I'm stuck in Blacktown. So luckily, her and her father come down and they picked me up and they drove me home, you know. So I was saved by my girlfriend and her father, you know. So that's being stranded by a train, you know. And that wasn't very, I mean, in them days, they didn't consider that. And that train, it was a steam train, as I said, it turned around and I had to stand between the carriages.
Yep, yep.
I had to stand on that and same again. I didn't bother me. I loved it. All covered in soot and you'd be spitting soot out of your mouth and because the train, you know, with all the smoke and stuff, you know. But the train was that packed because everyone was trying to get home before they went on strike. You know, and it was a pretty horrific experience for a, you know, 15, 16-year-old.
Because back in then days, as we'll talk about in the next episode, we haven't had many strikes lately, so...
No. But then though the unions, though, no matter what indifferences they had, they were always going out on strike, and they, you know, they set chaos everywhere. You know, I mean, it's pretty tough. You know, especially when you, I mean, you know, I didn't have much money. I mean, I was I was only getting what was it, $10 a week. That was my wage, $10 a week. Half of it went, I had to pay my mum board, and the other half was my weekly train fare. I had hardly anything. I might have had a couple of dollars left. I used to take sandwiches to work because I couldn't afford to buy food. On payday, it was great. I'd buy lunch.
Yeah.
But other days, I used to pack a sandwich. And we had like a thing. I used to take tea bags to work and, you know, stuff like that to have a cup of tea. But, you know, you didn't have the luxuries to what people have now. It was unreal.
You've told me before that they used to have circus trains.
Yeah.
That used to come to Penrith kid. When they used to have circuses.
Yep. They used to, Penrith Station, opposite the station, now is your place, Westyfield. It was a cattle yard. Next to the pub was a big cattle yard. And used to turn around and they used to unload all the people, because then we had a lot of farming properties around here. They used to load and unload the to go to the markets and things. They'd send them by train. Horses and stuff used to go as well. But they also used to, every so often, once or twice a year, the circus used to come to town. And so, you know, they'd advertise beforehand around with posters and things in the shop windows. So when we knew they were coming, we used to go down to the station because we'd, you know, wanted to see all the elephants and lions and things. So we'd go down there and watch them unload, and or they had their own, the circus had their own train. So they used to, like, shunt them up onto this dead line that where the yards were, and they had their own carriages and things like that. But they used to use the elephants to, instead of using the train pushing up and down, they used to use the elephants to push the carriages and that. So they used to park the trains there while they were in town. So, and then they'd put the animal, you know, like, they wouldn't put the lions and things in the thing, but they had ponies and giraffes and what else did they have? Camels. You know, they had all different animals like that, that they'd unload them out of the trains and put them in the yards so that they could turn around and move around a little bit, and that after being on the train from where they come from, you know, the last place. So we'd go down there to see all the animals all excited, you know. So, and I've always loved elephants. So, you know.
That's an episode on its own.
Is it ever? So I'd turn around and go down there to see all the animals, you know, me and my brother and my sister and that, and we'd get all our other friends, we'd all get down there. And if you were prepared to do odd jobs around, they'd give you a free pass to the circus, like the boys that helped to put the tents up and stuff like that. But I turned around, I got a job once picking up the elephant manure. So I got a free pass to get into the circus, you know. So, but that was always a big thing when the circus come to town. And then they'd have a big parade through the main town. And they, like, the girls would be all dressed up and wearing the their fancy clothes, and like the trapeze artist girls and things. And they'd be riding the elephants and the horses and everything. And they'd have a big parade through town for advertising to get everyone to go to the circus at the local... We used to go, it used to be set up at the showground, or there was a big thing near the showground where they set up there to go to the circus. So that was a big exciting thing for the local town. And you could go down and walk around and have a look at all the animals in the cages and things. And then when the show started, you know, you'd go to the window and get your tickets to go into the circus.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine them doing that now, because there's not many circuses around, and they just use trucks and
yeah, there's
that
only
sort of thing.
We get one circus here every so often. What is it? Stardust,
yeah.
Yeah, but out the back of Penrith here, a place called Landilo, or some people call it Landilio, they've actually got a big block of land out there, and they keep all their spare seats and tents and machinery and trailer things and trucks and stuff. I think that's where they do their off season. They go out there to unwind, and if you go out past there, you can actually sometimes see some of the animals having a break from the circus and whatever, you know. But they only come around this area because everyone's sort of gone on about circuses now, and they're not allowed. A lot of them have got rid of the animals. It's mainly just all clowns and trapeze artists and things. But they come once a year to St Mary's. That's the next couple of towns up from here. And they set up in Penrith as well. So that's it.
So for most of your working life, you were either very close to home or you drove. So for many, many years, you wouldn't have caught a train.
No, no.
And then you and I have been on some steam trains.
Yeah, we've had a few journeys out on the old steam trips. Down, you took me down to Wollongong. We went down in the train. Well, like we drove to a certain place and got on the train. And we went down near Wollongong Way. Then the train stops there for so long, and we went out and walked around the town and had some lunch in the park, and then we went back and got on the train to go back to wherever the car was to come home. That's when they made that movie, Babe, and we went past where they made the movie, and they had a big thing about... was it Robinson or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Was where they made the movie, and so they had, you know, they had people walking through the train carriages and telling you, you know, about it. And you could also buy tea or coffee, and they used to have homemade scones and jam and cream. So, but we used to take our own picnic. I used to make sandwiches for us and take a drink and that, because it got a bit expensive, you know. But where was the other one?
We went to the Zigzag Railway a couple of times.
Oh, we went there. I love the Zigzag. I could go there all the time. I love that out there. I mean, that's really fantastic because you've got the smell of the steam train and the time it takes to get on there and the experience of going up the mountain and doing what they call the zigzag, because you go up, stop, back up another section and whatever. And then when you get to the top... You can get out, and they've got a picnic area and everything else. And then they have the train later on. There's no limit. You can go up and down as long as you've got your ticket for the day. You can go up and down whatever times you want. Certain spots you can get off.
Yeah, they have picnic spots.
They have picnic spots, and then they have spots where you could stop to take photographs. Oh, I'm frightened of heights, but there's parts there. I wouldn't get out of the train, but Eric and his mates would get out and to take pictures and things, you know. I just look from where I was. Oh, I'm right, I'll stay here. But, oh, looking down the valley, you know, from the train line, oh, it's really scary for me. It's really frightening, you know. But they're talking now. I've read, listening on the, I listen to the Great Train Show. They're talking about extending it again to another, for more extra people to go and have the, you know, train rides on the steamers. They're talking about extending the track. So that would be a good thing to go and see.
And they're also talking about making it so you can get on and off the electric train to and from Sydney at the other end of the line as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the last time we went up there, we went up in your car. But the time before that, we went up, there was a group of us went up.
And we caught the
train.
And
my brother and sister and my niece and you, and we went up by this electric train from here, and we got out at the railway line.
At the bottom.
At the bottom. And then we had to walk across to get the tickets for the steam train thing. But when we came home, it was freezing. Remember that? We're standing on the rail, and the railway, where you stand to get on the electric train to come home wasn't very wide, and it was open, and we were frozen. We had scarves around our necks.
It was the middle of winter.
Yeah. No, it wasn't the middle of winter.
That's what
it
I felt like.
It was just the start. It was coming into winter, but it wasn't the middle of winter. But the next day it snowed there. So we were getting all the cold, icy winds from further up where it was snowing. And we didn't know till we got home. But that was the coldest I'd ever been. All my bones were trembling, you know. It was freezing.
And I think I remember saying, oh, this is a great idea. It's so cold.
we picked the wrong time to go. But it was still, it was a good time out. It was part of the experience.
It was, it was. And also, a few years ago, we sort of mentioned it before, when you went up to Muswellbrook on the CountryLink Explorer.
Yeah, yeah, that was in 97.
In 97?
Yeah, that was when I had a girlfriend that lived there. She lived at a place called Wingen, good name for a town. And we turned around and I went up just before Christmas to stay with her for a bit of a break.
And you stayed there over New Year's.
Yeah, and she, what happened was you helped me at the centre because you went to work that day. And you turned around and you came in with me because I'd never been then. I had just been very ill and it was part of my recovery.
And that was the first time that you'd been on a normal passenger train.
Yeah, for years. And so that was my goal of part of my recovery was to go up to stay with this girlfriend. So you put me on the train. I think you couldn't get rid of me quick enough. And you booked my bags in because I had this whopping big suitcase because I went for 2 weeks. And I got in the train. You got me in my seat and everything else. You're a good little boy, you know. And then you said, bye-bye, Mummy. And then you stood outside the train when it took off. And then you went to work because you're in your uniform.
Mm.
So that was when it took, it was about, what, 3-4 hour trip?
About 4 hours, yeah.
Because it was a fast train thing and that. And then when I got to Muswellbrook, my girlfriend, Linda, her name was, she met me there. And she met me at the station in the car. And then we went into town and did some shopping and went back to her place. But what was it coming home? I can't remember. Oh, yeah, when I stayed there, she had this girlfriend of hers lived on her husband worked on a big dairy farm. So for the experience, they invited us to go there for New Year's Eve to celebrate. So I turned around and we went there. Well, I turned around and I drove, and because I'm a diabetic and I can't drink, so she got on the booze. She was drinking Kentucky bourbon and she wiped herself out. So we sat on this great big dairy farm of about 20 acres. You had to go through 2 gates because in them days everything was by distance, by timing, not by miles. It was, you know, oh, it's 20 minutes up the road or whatever. But on this property, you had to go through 2 or 3 big gates because you had shut the gates. So she drove there, and so I was the gate person. I had to get out, open the gate, drive the car in, then she'd let me in and we'd get in the car and go up to the property. So, you know, we took some snacks and stuff like that. So New Year's Eve 97 was playing games like card games and board games and stuff. And I was drinking Diet Pepsi, or I had a cup of tea, a couple of cups of tea, while she was on the slot, you know. And she completely wrote herself off that night. I had to take her home and put her to bed, and she doesn't remember driving coming home. She was that drunk, fair dinkum. So that was an episode of...
And how did you find the train on the way back?
I enjoyed it because of being able to just sit in the train and looking out the window at all the different places and things. And I enjoyed it. I like going on trips in the train like that because I'm a terrible car passenger. If I'm driving, I'm terrible because I say, look at that, and I'm taking my eyes off the bloomin' road.
Whereas I'm like, what's the road?
Yeah, I'm better as a passenger because I can look around and
then things. You say to me, look at that.
Look at that, look at that. So, yeah, so that was the episode of doing that.
Owing to a defective driver, trains have been slightly disrupted. Please watch the indicator board and listen to the announcements for the destination of each train. City Rail thanks you for your cooperation.
So it would have been a big difference comparing the steam train and that train on the same trip.
Oh, yeah, it was. The big difference. I mean, the time was quicker. It was more comfortable. And the old steam train thing, I mean, it was sitting on a rock-hard seat. No padding. Whereas a new train, it was fantastic because they had the toilets. You could go to the diner to get something to eat.
And you had more money this time.
I had more money. And I actually went up and I bought a salad sandwich and a cup of tea that I didn't spill down myself because I actually put lids on the tea. And they turned around and it was only two-seater. Like, the other one was like a double bench and you shut the door and you're in like a cabin. Mm. Whereas on the coming back on the second trip, it was a big long carriage, but it was all carpeted. The floor was carpeted. The seats were padded.
Windows that open?
No, the windows didn't open, and they had the seats were like two-person per seat. So, and I mean, it was pretty good too because I met like the person sitting next to me, you strike up a conversation and that. So you had a bit of someone to talk to, where they were, what they'd been, and they tell you their story and you tell them your story. And so the time just zapped. To get home. And then when I got home, I turned around and I got off at Stratfield because a train went through Stratfield back to the city. So I got off at Stratfield because I had a friend of mine that lived at Stratfield. And I had a mobile phone then. It was my first mobile phone. So we used to keep in contact, ring you and ring Michael. On the mobile phone, that was another thing to compare with talking about telephones. To ring you, to ring back to here, to Sydney, my girlfriend used to have, where she lived at Wingen, it was sort of like a big valley with all the mountains all around. We had to go up to the dam and stand up in the car park of the dam to get service on the mobile phone.
Because that was the highest point.
That was the highest point of the area, and you couldn't phone out. So we'd go up there so I could ring you for 3 minutes to say I was okay. And when I was coming home or whatever, I wanted to ring you for. But you couldn't ring me because there was no service.
Because I didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah, but you couldn't ring in because it wouldn't ring my phone because there was no service on the phone. So I used to have to ring the house phone. But I didn't want to use her phone to make calls. It wouldn't have bothered her, but I'm not a user like that. So I had my own phone with my own thing, And then if we went into town, we used to go into Scone. So we'd turn around and we'd go and have lunch in the park so I could ring you from there. So because you could pick up range there because you didn't have all these big mountains all the way around. So, but that was a big experience. And then I got off at Stratfield because this friend of mine said, get off, I'll meet you at the station and I'll drive you home. So I got off at Stratfield and he met me at the station because then I had a crook leg. And I had a stiff leg and I was waiting to have an operation on my knee. And so I walked with a walking stick. And so he turned around and said to me, because Eric's working, get off at Stratfield and I'll carry your bags for you. So I was lucky there. Michael met me. He carried my bags and we ended up going down the elevator thing. They had elevators then.
Yep.
And instead of taking me home, he had his little girl with him. And he decided he wanted to go for a swim. So I minded his little girl at one pool while he went to another.
So you made it home eventually?
Yeah, 2 days later, he decided to take me back to meet his mum and dad, and I had to sleep on an airbed in the lounge room. And all I wanted to do was get home to my own bed.
Yeah.
But that's another story as well. So that was a journey and a half I'll never forget.
It certainly was. Now, do you have a poem for us?
Yeah, today I'd like to read a poem written by my brother, Keith. And I think it's quite appropriate. And it's called Metal Monster. And this is how it goes. Our seat we take in a metal monster as it clambers along, making our life easier, although taken for granted, in this our metal entombment. Short but sweet, but to the point.
Well, that's it.
So what we'd like to do now is I'd like to dedicate a song to relate with what we've been talking about. And this song is called This Train Won't Run, and it was written and recorded by Jerry Lee Serber. And Eric can fill you in on the FM side of this song.
Actually, I've played some of Jerry's music before on IRC FM, and he's pretty cool. I'm not usually into the country sort of music, as you are. That's another episode on its own.
It's got a good beat to it.
But yeah, he's pretty cool. If you want to hear some of the music that I play on my podcast, IRCFM.com.
You asked me to leave, and I told you goodbye. You didn't have to ask me twice, but give me a reason why. Won't you call me on the phone, begging me to come back? This train won't run on a tore up track. This train won't run.
That song's pretty cool. You like that?
Yeah, it's a good song. Very good song. I like the beat to it. And it's organs and that in it. It's really good. Good country beat.
And yeah. Very, very appropriate for the subject at hand.
That's right.
And so we have to say hi to another podcast.
Yes, this is another new show that IRC's put me onto, and I can't wait for them to record. And I'm always nagging IRC, they've done another show yet?
And I'm like, no, not yet.
I want to send out a good cheerio to you guys over in America, and it's called Some Guys in a Car, or at the moment they're actually recording in the basement because there's that much snow over there. I tell you what, boys, send us over some here. We need it. You know, we've been over here. It's the opposite, 40 degrees, heat. We're having heat waves here, and I live in the room with the air conditioner going. It's too hot to go outside to do anything. Everything's dead and brown and dying or died.
So what do you like about Some Guys in a Car?
I just like how they waffle on, and I like how they set each other up. And, you know, they joke around, and, you know, I mean, they don't hold anything back. They burp and cough and fart and whatever, you know, and have a bit of a stir with each other. And they're really, you know, sound like a group of nice guys, you know. And, you know, they do the same. They talk about, because they grew up with each other and whatever, and they sometimes talk about their work and their families. And then they're real tracky Star Trek freaks.
Mm.
So they have their competitions, and it's interesting because it's not the same old, and they're very interesting, and I enjoy their show. So keep it up, guys. You've got a new fan.
So you can find them at someguysinacar.com, and not, as I wrote on the website once, someguysinaguy.com. And here's a new promo that I've actually made for the guys, because they're too busy to make their own.
Let it rip.
I'm Irk from Channel Irk, channelirk.com. And Steve and some guys in a car, they're too busy to make their own promo. They're probably all driving around in the car from Knight Rider. Or the van from Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!
Or, if they're really friendly to each other, the squad from Emergency Squad 51. Who knows? They're always out and about driving their cars, and so they're too busy to make promos and to promote themselves. To visit some guys in a car, go to someguysinacar.com. If you accidentally go to someguysinaguy.com, Channel Irk accepts no responsibility. So that's Some Guys in a Car, and I'll be looking forward to meeting those guys and a lot more people when I go to the States.
And you'll have to take a photo of them for me.
Oh, definitely. There's no...
Maybe you might get an autograph.
An autograph photo of Some Guys in a Car.
Yeah, why not?
I hope they've got good cars.
Yeah. I like their open-air V-dub that they try to squeeze into. But then again, I'd like to see him in the basement too.
Well, who knows what we can do. So this has been episode number 3.
That's right.
Of Blast From A Past podcast. You can find us and all the previous episodes at blastfromthepastpodcast.com. You can email us irkpod@gmail.com. Leave a comment on the show notes. And when we get comments, we'll read them, but we haven't got any to read.
Yeah, nobody yet. Loves me yet. I'm not that boring, surely.
We've had some good download figures, though, so that's...
Yes, I'm really impressed. I didn't think I'd get anybody. Seeing that we haven't advertised, I'm really, really pleased. Somebody out there loves us.
So that's...
Thank you.
That's cool. You can find us on iTunes, of course, but if you want to listen to all 4 podcasts, the easiest spot to go to is channelirk.com. So until next time, we'll talk a bit about trains from my point of view,
yeah,
and contrast it to what we've just spoke about. Until next time, good night, Interweb.
Good night, Interweb. Judy's got a stick shift. Judy's got a stick shift. Judy's got a stick shift. Judy's got a stick shift.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. There's no ease in podcast and no ease in blueberry.com.